Thank you for the introduction. So producers on the Southern High Plains face several environmental challenges. Not only do we see low rainfall, we also face high evapotranspiration rates and high winds. The native vegetation in our region was shortgrass prairie, but today we see a dominance of row crops, especially cotton and grain sorghum. Now, this transition in the agricultural landscape led to an increased reliance on supplemental irrigation from the Ogallala Aquifer. Now, the Ogallala is quite large, as you can see, but on the Southern High Plains, we're facing a rapid decline in the saturated thickness of the aquifer. In these deep red and orange regions in the figure, we've seen a decline by as much as 30 to 40 meters in less than the past 30 years. And so when you consider all of these challenges, you have to ask, what alternatives do producers have going into the future? So more than a decade of research has already proven that forage-based beef stocker systems are an economical and a resource-efficient option for the Southern High Plains. Unfortunately, most of these only use warm-season perennial grasses that are simply too low in protein to meet those nutritional demands of the growing stockers. Now, it's been well established in literature that high-quality legumes could increase those stocker gains, but they're limited in their adoption throughout our region because of their high water use. And so we asked, is it possible to strategically integrate these high-quality legumes without jeopardizing the water use efficiency of the system? This is how we developed an idea of a protein bank, and it's simply an extension of limit grazing, but it gives us flexibility in how we use our water resource. It evolved from a fodder bank concept, where you concentrate your limited farm resource onto a small land area. So in our case, we would concentrate our limited water resource onto a small area of alfalfa, and that would provide a protein supplement to our warm season grass pastures. Now, as you may imagine, it takes a lot of planning as to how best to integrate this protein bank into an existing grazing system. And for instance, just the duration and frequency in which you rotate your livestock depend on how much forage you have available. How are your pastures laid out? Do you have enough labor to move your livestock? Your climate will affect your pre-season grazing strategy, whereas weather affects more of the day-to-day, more tactical grazing management decisions. And so with all that in mind, the overall objective of my research was to compare the productivity and efficiency of a grass legume pasture system employing regionally novel forage combinations and grazing techniques to a grass-only system. Now, that's a really big question to answer in one presentation. And so what I want to do is focus on three key questions. Can the inclusion of legumes increase stocker gains? How much additional irrigation will the grass legume system require? And finally, what is the impact of the legumes on the water use efficiency of the system? So my research was conducted in Lubbock, Texas, between the summers of 2014 and 2016. Each year, we stocked the pastures beginning in early June with British cross steers at a fixed stocking rate. Now, you'll note that the stocking rate for the grass legume system was a bit higher than that of the grass-only system, and that's because we anticipated higher forage productivity, even though we did fertilize the grass-only pastures, and we wanted to equalize forage allowance between the treatments. So our two treatments were grass only and grass legume, and they were set up in a randomized complete block design with three repetitions. So each treatment replicate in the grass only systems had a dry land native shortgrass prairie, an area of WW beetle old world bluestem, and also a dry land teff pasture. And they would rotate among these three based on forage availability. Likewise, in the grass legume treatment system replicates, they also had a comparable shortgrass native prairie and teff pasture that were generally managed as dry land, But here, our old world blue stem had been interseeded with alfalfa and yellow sweet clover to boost the protein of that mixture. So these three pastures comprised what we call the base pastures of our forage rotation. And so they would rotate among these three based on forage availability. But each week, they would rotate from any of those three into the alfalfa protein bank. So in year one, we decided to rotate the stalkers in 4 hours a day, 3 days a week. But we found that that rotation schedule didn't best utilize that high-quality forage that we had available. So in year two and three, we switched to a longer but less frequent duration into that protein bank. And what we found was that rotating one 48 to 72-hour period a week better utilized that high-quality forage resource that we had available to really maximize the gains. So during the growing season, I monitored forage biomass and various aspects of the nutritive value. We weighed the stalkers approximately every 28 days. We monitored rainfall and the irrigation that we had applied. We also used weekly soil volumetric water content readings to make more informed irrigation management decisions. In my presentation today, water use efficiency refers to the kilograms of live weight gain divided by total water delivery, and that includes rainfall from March until when we terminated grazing each fall, and also irrigation that we've corrected for time spent on pasture. My data were analyzed in SAS 9.4 with the experimental unit of a block of steers within a given grazing treatment. We used repeated measures in PROC mixed and analyzed with appropriate covariant structures. So first, can the inclusion of legumes increase stalker gains? To answer this, let's compare live weight gain per hectare. So on the y-axis, there it is. So on the y-axis, you have live weight gain per hectare, and across the x-axis are three trial years. So you can see that the inclusion of legumes in year one did increase live weight gain per hectare. And when we changed the rotation frequency into that protein bank, the difference was more dramatic in year two and even more so in year three. So it appears that the live weight gain per hectare that we see out of the grass legume system highly depends on the duration or the time that they spent in that protein bank and how well we utilize that alfalfa. Whereas the grass-only system appears to be more vulnerable to climatic variability. So next, how much additional irrigation will the grass legume system require? Before we can answer that, we need to look at monthly rainfall distribution. So now we have rainfall on our y-axis, and then months across the x-axis. And you can see that although variation exists, Lubbock typically receives around 50 millimeters of rainfall each month. But in year one, we saw some heavy early summer rains, and that forced us to cut hay to maintain forage quality. So even though we applied irrigation once the rains began to decrease throughout late summer, we still couldn't rejuvenate those pastures and had to terminate grazing in August. So in year two, when we again saw those heavy summer rains, we stockpiled that excess forage growth, and it allowed us to fill in during that late summer drought in August and September, and we could keep the cattle on trial until October. Now, year three was much, much drier, even for West Texas, and we were about 75 millimeters of below average for rainfall during the March to October season. And while we did stockpile forage where we could, we did have to rely more on supplemental irrigation, and we were able to keep the cattle on trial until the last week of September. So now, looking at the maximum irrigation that we applied, you can see that although rainfall was above average in those first 2 years, it was poorly distributed throughout the growing seasons, and so we had to still rely on timely irrigation. So as you would expect in year three, especially in the grass legume system, we had to rely more on irrigation, And while I acknowledge that there are numerical differences in this table, when you average across the 3 years, there was no significant difference in the maximum irrigation that we applied to each of these treatment systems. So finally, what is the impact of legumes on the water use efficiency of the system? So we'll compare water use efficiency now on the y-axis across the 3 trial years on the x-axis. And you see a stability in the water use efficiency of the grass-only system that we didn't see with the live weight gain per hectare. And so this shows that we really did manage these stalkers with respect to our limited water resource. Now, across all 3 trial years, the inclusion of the legume did increase the water use efficiency of the system. But I'd like to take just a minute to discuss this trend that we see in the figure. So if you recall, in year 2, we had much higher live weight gains than in year 1. So why didn't water use efficiency increase? We also had much higher rainfall in year 2. And so if you think about how we calculated water use efficiency, the increase that we saw in live weight gain simply wasn't proportional to the increase in rainfall. Alternatively, in year 3, we were able to maintain those high live weight gains in that grass legume system. So despite the low rainfall and the need for more supplemental irrigation, we were able to partition that to a much higher quality forage resource through the protein bank in the grass legume system than we could for the grass pastures in the grass-only system. And so the result, when we calculated it out, was a water use efficiency more than 3 times that of the grass-only system. So in conclusion, the inclusion of legumes increased beef stalker gain per hectare. The grass legume system did not require more water. And so overall, the legumes increased the water use efficiency of the system with respect to animal live weight gain. My next step is to construct a more comprehensive water use efficiency equation to account for the hay that we harvested, especially in year 1 from multiple pastures, but also the old row bluestem seed that we were able to harvest in years 1 and 3. My research has allowed for a better understanding of a stalker gain water use nexus. And from here, we can calculate a water footprint for these beef production systems, but also understand how they fit within this broader but more contemporary concept that we see of virtual water. Most importantly, though, we have developed another viable alternative for producers in the Southern High Plains who wish to transition out of the irrigated row crop production. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions?
Yes. So you had that in our rotation, mm-hmm. right? One thing that I was reading about that, and even some farmers talking about, is that it's quite difficult to graze.
Right.
And also sometimes when the cattle bite comes with boots,
right. Mm-hmm. So the question was, did we have any problems with the cattle grazing the teff, lodging or pulling the plants out? And so we did not see any lodging concerns. We also planted the teff no-till, and that really helped secure those roots in the ground. I did not see the cattle pull the plants out with the roots. A trial on farm that was done by an animal scientist, they planted their teff into a tilled area, and they did see that you could, as the cattle grazed, if the teff was not well established, it would pull from the ground.
So you were saying that no-till might be a solution for that?
No-till would be a solution. If you want to graze early, no-till is the best way to go with the teff. So the question was, what was my bloat prevention? And We did not see any bloat during the 3 years of this trial, but we also kept poloxylene blocks in with each of the pastures that as they were grazing in that grass legume system, whether they were on the alfalfa or on a grass-only pasture, to keep that poloxylene in their system.
Yes. I sometimes wonder whether the term protein bank is appropriate when we talk about legumes and whether it's actually an energy bank. Do you have any digestibility right. data that would give you any idea about the relative digestibility
right.
of the components of the mixture and whether really we're dealing with an energy issue, mm-hmm. protein issue, or both?
So the question was, is the term protein bank appropriate based on the forage quality data? And I really wish I could have shared the forage quality data with everyone today because it is very enlightening as to why we saw the treatment differences. So forage allowance was never limiting, and forage energy components were never limiting throughout the growing season. What we did see was limiting was the protein. So even TEF, which is very highly digestible and even comparable to alfalfa in terms of NDF and ADF, had half or less of the protein than our alfalfa protein bank. So for instance, the old world blue stem and native pastures typically only averaged about 6 to 8% protein. TEF would be around 12%, maybe up to 14 at its peak in the growing season. Alfalfa, the pre-grazed samples never dipped below 20%, and when it was very vegetative, was often up near 30% crude protein.
All right, let's thank her because we have to keep going. Thank you.